What do the most successful growing businesses have in common? They're working together in Slack. Slack is where work happens with all your people, data, and information in one AI-powered place. Grow your business in Slack. Visit slack.com to get started.
The global economy, led by the U.S. and China, is beginning to make a comeback, but many developing nations are being left behind.
So a lot of countries are not looking at getting back to their sort of 2019 GDP until 2023, 2024.
We'll talk more about the future for those emerging markets and how President Biden is working around opposition on gun control. Plus, could you quit coffee for a month? It's Thursday, April 8th. I'm Anne-Marie Fertoli for The Wall Street Journal. Here's what's news. President Biden announced a series of actions today aimed at curbing gun violence in an effort to implement restrictions without Congress.
Gun violence in this country is an epidemic. Let me say it again. Gun violence in this country is an epidemic, and it's an international embarrassment.
In a speech in the White House Rose Garden, the president focused on so-called ghost guns, which are made from parts bought online or 3D printed. He said they should be treated as firearms, require serial numbers and buyer background checks. Biden also said that pistols modified with arm braces should be subject to restrictions that require buyers to pay a fee and submit identifying information to the Justice Department. Biden also called on Congress to pass more sweeping legislation, including renewing the ban on assault-style weapons. Republicans have objected to most Democratic gun control proposals. Federal Reserve Chairman Jerome Powell pointed to a strong March jobs report as a sign of continued economic recovery. But he says the Fed is still waiting to see a significant improvement in the economy before easing supportive measures.
And we got a taste of what faster progress will look like with the March employment report. Close to 1 million jobs, particularly if you add in the revisions for January and February. And we want to see a string of months like that so we can really begin to show progress toward our goals.
Powell spoke today at a seminar on the global economy hosted by the International Monetary Fund. He also expressed the importance of vaccines for the U.S. and global recovery. We'll talk about the disparities in the global economic recovery later in the show. We report that Credit Suisse is in crisis mode after announcing this week that it would take a $4.7 billion hit from the blowout of the Archegos hedge fund. That's on top of the damage incurred from the collapse of financing firm Greensill Capital that a person familiar with the bank says may cost it up to $1.5 billion. The bank is now investigating how it pushed into risky trades it couldn't easily exit after years of beefing up compliance and risk. Credit Suisse stock has lost nearly a quarter of its value since late February. On yesterday's show, we talked about Apple's new privacy rules that require apps to ask users for permission before tracking them for ad purposes. Today, we report exclusively that Procter & Gamble participated in testing an advertising technique that's being developed in China to sidestep Apple's new rules. P&G said in a statement that it's providing input to the trade group. The company says its goal is to deliver useful content consumers want in a way that prioritizes data privacy, transparency, and consent. But P&G declined to provide other details about the program or whether it intends to use the technology. And General Motors says it's halting production at several of its North American factories due to the shortage of semiconductor chips that's threatening the auto industry's rebound. GM will idle or reduce output at three plants and extend closures of a Kansas City area factory and a plant in Ontario. The production cuts were previously reported by CNBC. Coming up after the break, we'll talk more about disparities in the global recovery.
You're a growing business and you can't afford to slow down. If anything, you could probably use a few more hours in the day. That's why the most successful growing businesses are working together in Slack. Slack is where work happens, with all your people, data, and information in one AI-powered place. Start a call instantly in huddles and ditch cumbersome calendar invites. Or build an automation with Workflow Builder to take routine tasks off your plate. No coding required. Grow your business in Slack. Visit slack.com to get started.
As we reported earlier this week, the International Monetary Fund lifted its growth expectations for the global economy, led by the U.S. and China. But many developing nations and emerging markets are being left behind. Last year, the number of people living in extreme poverty rose by 124 million, the biggest increase on record, according to the World Bank. 39 million more people will join that group this year. The IMF projects that the per capita income in emerging and developing countries, excluding China, will be 20% lower by the end of 2022 than it would have been had the pandemic never happened. And the vaccines the U.S. is banking on to lift the economy are still not rolling out in many parts of the world. Joining me now from Johannesburg to talk more about the challenges they're facing is Wall Street Journal Africa Deputy Bureau Chief Gabrielle Steinhauser. Hi, Gabrielle. Thanks for joining me.
Hi. Thanks so much for having me.
So, Gabrielle, when we look at the disparities between nations leading the recovery and those that are being left behind, a huge issue is access to COVID-19 vaccines. Speaking at a seminar today, the managing director of the International Monetary Fund, Kristalina Georgieva, said this.
This year, next year, vaccine policy is economic policy. It is even a higher priority than the traditional tools of fiscal and monetary policy.
Gabrielle, can you tell us a little bit more about what we're seeing playing out in emerging economies and developing countries when it comes to access to vaccines?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, what she said is spot on, because the key to reopening our societies, to the key to people feeling comfortable to go out, spend their money, even make money again, is vaccines. And, you know, what we're seeing in the world's poorest and even some of the, you know, emerging market nations is that there just isn't the same access to vaccines as, you know, especially you guys in the US and people in the UK and people in Israel are experiencing. So, for instance, today there was this announcement from COVAX, which is this WHO-backed facility that gives free doses of vaccines to the world's poorest countries. And they sort of proudly said that they had delivered vaccines to 100 nations now in the past sort of 6 weeks. But they delivered 38 million doses of vaccines. All of those vaccines are two-dose vaccines. So if you start doing the maths, that doesn't leave a lot of doses per head.
And a challenge closely related to access to vaccines is reopening economies. And we're seeing this play out across industries, of course, but especially in countries that rely on tourism. Can you talk a little bit about those hard hit in the tourism industry especially?
Sure. I mean, you know, when you look at tourism, you have the sort of small island states like, you know, St. Lucia or Barbados, where really a big chunk of their economy depends on tourism. And they've just seen their GDP collapse. So, for instance, St. Lucia, which is in the Caribbean, its GDP collapsed by 20% last year and is expected to grow by just, I think, if I remember correctly, just over 1%. That's not even a recovery. But even here in South Africa, where I am, you know, GDP collapsed by 7% last year, and we're looking at a recovery of 3%. And of course, tourism is a much smaller chunk of the economy here. But, you know, you've probably all heard about the South African variant. And if you are running a hotel or a tourism business here, this is sort of the worst, you know, advertising slogan you could possibly think of.
You mentioned GDP, and something we are seeing help lift GDP is commodity prices. But the gains that are made there often aren't trickling down to general populations, right?
I think there's a few reasons for that. The big one is that, of course, not all countries are commodity exporters. So if oil prices rise, that sort of benefits the government coffers of the countries that export oil. But a lot of poor countries are oil importers, and a lot of poor people, you know, even if they don't have their own cars, they depend on privately run public transport where prices are adapted according to gas prices. And then even in oil exporting countries, you know, the benefits don't really distribute well across the nation. So, for instance, in Nigeria, which has a very oil dependent economy, the government is like, yes, great, you know, oil prices are going up. But at the same time, they've made this sort of promise that they would phase out an oil subsidy that is costing a lot of money and that, you know, international institutions don't like, and that is sort of distortive. But then that obviously hurts all the people who are dependent on transport, on moving around and having to pay for gas.
Officials from the G20 and the International Monetary Fund did meet this week. Gabrielle, what is the rest of the world doing or hoping to do to help lift emerging markets and developing economies out of this crisis?
There are a few initiatives. So about a year ago, the G20, which is sort of the world's leading economies, they gave the poorest countries a break on debt payments, on bilateral debt. So that's sort of like debt owed to another government. And that has saved some countries some money. The downside of that is that this is not debt forgiveness. This is money that's going to have to be paid back further down the line, sometimes at higher interest rates than before, because you have to sort of make up for the losses you created by not paying earlier. So while it gives countries a little bit of breathing space now, it doesn't really resolve the problems in, you know, a few years down the line. There's talk about debt restructuring, and a few countries have raised their hands. But so far, there's not this sort of big initiative like we saw in the 1990s when there was large-scale debt forgiveness for many poor countries. And that's what a lot of people are calling for right now.
A lot of different factors are going into what is going to help these economies recover. What are the latest projections for how long it might take for these countries that have been left behind to pull out of this?
So a lot of countries are not looking at getting back to their sort of 2019 GDP until 2023, 2024. And then we have to take into account that this is, you know, the overall GDP. That is not even per capita GDP. And some of these countries have populations that grow quite significantly every year. So even if your GDP stays stable, it's ultimately a recession. And then there's, you know, the big thing that, you know, we've seen for a long time, and that, you know, we're also seeing it in advanced economies, is that the recovery is not even, and that often people who are already poor are going to have a harder time digging themselves out. So their income will remain lower for a much longer time, whereas, you know, people with better means, even in, you know, poor countries, can cushion themselves much more easily.
Wall Street Journal Africa Deputy Bureau Chief Gabrielle Steinhauser. Gabrielle, thank you so much for joining me today.
Sure. Thanks so much for talking to me.
And finally, next week, Muslims around the world begin Ramadan, a month of fasting from dawn to dusk. That means no food or drink, and it includes coffee. But as coffee lovers know, giving up on your daily dose of caffeine cold turkey can be hard and even involve withdrawal symptoms like those painful headaches. Our reporter Raja Abdul Rahim says some Muslims are finding creative ways to kick the habit ahead of time.
One of the most interesting, I think, is a woman named Shabana Mir. And she has the most involved process I've ever heard. So she basically drinks a regular cup of coffee every day. So she first started by going half regular, half decaf. But then every day she would reduce her coffee consumption by a few sips, sort of like kind of whittled down. And then eventually she switched over to just decaf. And then again, sort of did the sips. And then she switched over to black tea. And again, sort of reduce that. And then the last thing basically she does is switches over to green tea or white tea. And that's kind of the final stage before Ramadan starts. So she really does try to very gradually wean her body off.
And that's what's news for this Thursday afternoon. We'll be back tomorrow morning. If you like our show, please rate and review us wherever you get your podcasts. I'm Anne-Marie Fertoli for The Wall Street Journal.
What do the most successful growing businesses have in common? They're working together in Slack. Slack is where work happens with all your people, data, and information in one AI-powered place. Grow your business in Slack. Visit slack.com to get started.